And a very good Monday morning to you. It's time for a finer mid-morning coffee excursion. We'll just use excursion today with Adam. That would be I and the professor, Professor Ron Fineman, who has been denoted as the official WWGH presidentologist. Experts on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue occupants, past, present, future, and, of course, prognosticated. We take a virtual trip to Boca Raton, Florida, where it pretty much is summer every day. Of course, here in Ohio, we get four seasons. School is starting up, so looking forward to fall. Goodness sakes, Labor Day is in 2 weeks. My goodness, time is certainly flying. So where he hangs his hat there in Boca Raton, it's Dr. Ron Fineman. How are you today, sir?
Good morning, Adam. I'm doing fine. How are you?
Mainly marvelous for Monday, for the most part. Getting the week started with great programming here on The Talking Place, political, controversial, and otherwise. We, of course, mourn the death of one of the groundbreaking singers, not just in the United States, but in the whole universe, Aretha Franklin. We knew she was ill for a while, and she was well in her 70s. Are you as big of a fan of the groundbreaking music of the old school R&B singers like Aretha Franklin, Ron? Do you mourn for her loss and think we really have lost a few grooves in the virtual record that we play here in the United States?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, she was wonderful, and she represented a great era of music, and she's made contributions that will last way beyond her time.
Yeah. In Columbus, Beyonce and Jay-Z, who are on again, off again, married couple, they're currently married and happy, but that wasn't the case a few years ago. They played a concert, obviously a very popular, profitable concert in Columbus last week, and I remember saying, I do think Beyonce is a good singer. You know, I'm not a fan of rap and hip-hop, so I won't comment on Jay-Z. Beyonce is a good singer, but as far as I'm concerned, and she's very beautiful, that doesn't hurt. But as far as I'm concerned, Ron, she couldn't hold Aretha Franklin's microphone cable. There's nobody with a voice like that. And she influenced Gladys Knight, I think, with a somewhat of a similar sound. No one really sounds like Aretha, and no one ever will, I don't think. I mean, kind of like Karen Carpenter. She will never be replaced. But
I love Karen Carpenter. I always liked the Carpenters, yes.
Yeah, my mom was a huge fan, and again, their song Superstar is just haunting. The vocals that she does are simply amazing. We just lost her so early. Aretha Franklin living a full life and a bit of a political activist, certainly saw racial tension and how it affects the music industry. And this is, we could do a whole show on it, but again, I figured as fellow fans of old school music, understanding the influence, and again, I don't believe any of today's singers can hold a candle to singers like Aretha, Karen Carpenter, etc. We do certainly mourn the loss. Of course, we can get a little controversial, Ron, of the statement that President Trump made and others have made, the rather long, I would say, cerebral statement that former President Obama made about Aretha Franklin's death. Do you feel that there's always issues about Trump being racist? I mean, who knows? It depends how you look at it. It's not a simple thing to discuss. Do you think that President Trump meant what he said about Aretha Franklin? Do you think he was being a bit hypocritical? What are his thoughts deep down? And maybe does his statement, which did seem fairly kind, might it help to ease any fears that Trump really is a racist and does side with people like the white nationalists? Any thoughts on that?
I do not think that his statement was all that wonderful. When you talk about, I employed her, that's not the kind of thing you say at a time like this. To me, he's got to always put himself into the, I did this, you know, kind of thing. I think it was a very minimal statement. While, of course, Obama knows how to say things properly. He's such a gentleman and a dignified human being. But Trump is not. And I want to just tell you that I know someone who was with Trump 20 years ago. He was a caddy, for someone he was working for. And the N-word was used while they were golfing because the caddy for Trump was African-American. And I know someone else that I've talked to that said he worked on the properties of Trump at Mar-a-Lago and also in New Jersey, and he was there when he saw, you know, and he saw Trump, and Trump used the N-word a lot. So this idea he's never used the word, and maybe Omarosa Manigault Newman now has tapes to show it. Now, look, I'm not saying other people have not used the word, but for him to deny it, and the fact that his whole career has been based on racial hatred, I think going back to the 70s in Queens County when he was trying to block African-Americans from getting apartments, plus what happened in Central Park when he accused these people of having attacked and raped this jogger, and they were convicted and later was shown they were not guilty and they were released, and he still contends that these African-Americans that were arrested were indeed involved in that. So, I mean, his whole career has been one of racism. So for him to bring up the issue of I employed her, it's like almost like, you know, it's just not the kind of thing you say, you know, but yeah. That's Donald Trump for you.
I would say a better thing to say would I had the privilege and great pleasure of hearing her perform at my property.
Yes.
That might be a little better. Everything to him is, well, I guess it's the intern and his TV shows and all that stuff, and kind of thinking about, well, so-and-so worked for so-and-so. And I did kind of wonder, I'm glad he did say something, but I wonder if it may actually do more damage than good. It's a shame. Obama's statement, you know, as I said, I will give credit where credit is due. As you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Obama by any means, but I do things I like about him. He's extremely smart and well-spoken and a gentleman. And his statement was in-depth and very cerebral, and I really, really did like it. Aretha Franklin did many things, you know, in this country, Ron, and everywhere. I mean, I would say mostly in the United States and the U.K., where most music, you know, and most, especially the 60s to 80s music that we tend to be more fans of, originates and has roots. Things are said in music. Every song has a meaning. And some musicians are political. Some kind of stay out of it. And Stevie Wonder also is a political activist of sorts. But again, the main way that they talk is in the music. And I guess we find out more about Aretha Franklin and her influence. And it, like Karen Carpenter, will never be forgotten. And she really was a groundbreaker. And
yes, and I want to say that I was surprised to read. I had known that she was afraid of flying. So after 1984, she never left the United States. So that means she did all her concerts here and all her singing here. She never went to Europe, Asia, and Africa and Latin America. I was not aware of that. I didn't actually know that kind of detail, but she hated flying. So she stayed in this country, and maybe Canada, I guess, possibly, but she did not go beyond this continent.
Of course, I mean, as a big music fan and with a music DJ radio background, I did want to cover this, Ron, as I didn't even ask you about this earlier as we prepared for the show, but I certainly figured you were probably a big fan of Aretha and acknowledge the influence that she's had, and Heaven's definitely a lot more musical over the last few days.
Yes, and may I, now that we're talking about her and about mourning her, let's also celebrate that Rosalynn Carter hit 91 a couple of days ago. Her husband's going to be 94, Jimmy Carter, on October 1st, on Sunday, the 19th, Bill Clinton hit 72. So I think we should spend a moment to celebrate Rosalynn Carter and Bill Clinton.
Interesting. So Bill Clinton and Donald Trump are almost the same age. Isn't that intriguing?
Well, it's 2 months apart, and George W. Bush is in July. They're June, Trump, July, Bush 2, and August is Clinton. Clinton's actually the youngest of the three, but they're all in the same summer of 1946. It's interesting to have three presidents in a row born in the same year, and actually going backwards from August to July to June in the order in which they became president.
Around the holiday season of the previous year, there must have been something in the water. We'll just leave it.
Well, it was after the war was over. A lot of people got pregnant.
And last but not least, I imagine you're also a pretty big fan of the King Elvis, and it's been discussed that he died on the same day that Aretha Franklin did.
Actually, I hadn't thought of that. You said it. You're right. Yes, you're right. I hadn't put two and two together until now. Thank you for telling me that. Yes.
Yeah, and I remember when finding out about Elvis passing away. I mean, he was in his 40s. He didn't look too good. He'd gained some weight.
Yeah.
He had some drug issues that we still don't really know about, but you talk about an influence. I mean, we could spend 10 shows on him. So we want to talk politics and talk about 7 of your blogs. I'm never going to get through that in the next 35 minutes, but I'll certainly try my best. Maybe I'll just talk a little bit faster. But I would say Heaven right now, Ron, is having some pretty good sound quality. Mourning the 44th anniversary of the passing of Elvis, the recent passing of Aretha Franklin, people we lost way too young, like George Michael, Tom Petty. I tell you right now,
yes,
the concert up there is sounding awfully good. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
So anyway, Dr. Ron Feinman is on the phone with me. You know, we want to get some good out of it. I mean, Aretha Franklin lived a long life. She was ill for a while. Gosh, that voice, I tell you, there's a tribute channel to her on 49 Sirius, and I've been listening, and they have interviews with people that know her, playing some of her more obscure songs. You can't hear a bad song from that lady with that voice. It's like Frank Sinatra, Ron, kind of the same thing. Doesn't matter what she's singing. Doesn't matter how bad the song is, how bad the backing musicians are. You know it when you hear her. And it's just like, well, just like Frank, old Blue Eyes, sure. Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra was a fantastic singer, not such a great human being otherwise, but a great singer, no question.
Yeah, we'll never be the same. So Dr. Feinman is the author of a blog that he's been publishing for 10 years and about a week. He recently celebrated the anniversary. It's called theprogressiveprofessor.com, discussing current events. And again, he's a moderate Democrat. We've talked about that. And he writes blogs on from his perspective. But a lot of the stuff is historical related and really isn't partisan. It's just he's talking about little tidbits that we may not have been aware of and likes to tickle a few brain cells. And as I say, if you don't exercise your brain, it's going to atrophy like any other body part. On August 19th of 2018, and my calendar is right, that was yesterday, he wrote about Don McGahn. I pronounce it McGahn because I know some German, and it's a German-sounding name. Actually, it's kind of German and Irish together, which is kind of interesting. The Mick is Irish-sounding. The G-A-H-N is German, so I'm not sure what his ancestry is, so we'll just pronounce him Don McGahn so we don't sit here spending a whole show on pronouncing people's names. So Don McGahn is the new John Dean. Trump and Nixon scandals become linked in history. Of course, you know, Ron, I like to talk about Richard Nixon, Tricky Dicky, as we call him, and Watergate, and like anybody else, like to sometimes impersonate him because he's kind of a popular person to try to talk like. But you're making some parallels in more serious side of it, Ron. You're making parallels between investigations of the aforementioned Mr. Nixon and investigations of the current White House occupant, Donald Trump. John Dean, the White House counsel under President Nixon, revealed the illegal actions of his boss in the Watergate scandal. You write, now we're learning for certain that Don McGahn, the White House counsel under Donald Trump, has been cooperating with special counsel Robert Mueller on the actions of his boss. You write quite a bit about that. And Donald Trump, who seems to tell the world his thoughts and his opinions on Twitter, the first president to do that. But in all fairness, there was no Twitter when Richard Nixon was president, but certainly previous presidents like Obama, although he did use social media and does do a lot of tweeting now. He didn't kind of run his office from Twitter, but we've addressed that before.
He didn't have time. He was too busy working while this guy is spending one-fourth of his time golfing.
Yeah,
so also waste time otherwise. He never really does studying of anything, Trump, but he spends time on Twitter. But Obama was too busy to be on Twitter regularly. Now it's different.
And you write that Donald Trump is self-indicting as he continues to rant and rave on Twitter, including many bursts of anger as this posting is being formulated, as he realizes the future is gloomy as evidence of Russian collusion, obstruction of justice, abuse of power, violations of the Emoluments Clause, and other crimes have been gathered by Mueller. He also realizes that his son, Donald Jr., and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and many of his cabinet members and other advisors are in danger of being indicted, or as Donald Trump probably pronounces, indicted. Do you think Donald Trump knows how to pronounce indicted, Ron, or do you think he says indicted?
He might spell it wrong on Twitter if he did put it down. He might put a K in it somewhere.
I hate to sound mean, but he's not known really to be a master of spelling in the language. And some of the stuff is funny. And I mean, as you know, I laugh about Dan Quayle and his misspelling of potato and guffaws by both President Bushes. And, you know, we can in good fun at just some of the stuff from Donald Trump is a little unreal. But what do you make of this? I mean, there are conflicts of interest, Ron, and what's going to happen? Are there going to be people with famous last names like Trump Jr. and Kushner possibly in the slammer? Can we get a resolution and go back to being Americans and having a government, or is this going to be ongoing during this administration?
Well, I think they're really, especially Donald Trump Jr., but even Jared Kushner is in trouble, I think. It's just that, you know, we don't know the whole story. There's been no report yet by Mueller, but I think it's coming soon. I really do think it is, and I'm just concerned that what Trump is doing and taking away security clearances for everybody who's been in the government from the past, from, you know, so his intelligence and national security areas, because they're critical of him, so many of them, that is going to undermine our ability to defend ourselves, as, you know, from foreign foes, because we really need the great experience and background of the people who have served in the past. And just because they disagree with how he's behaving, I do not think is a grounds for what he's doing. And I think that he's, it's really a worry, like I say in that particular, particular entry, that the military behind the scenes, and particularly Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, have to work to prevent any dangerous actions by the president, such as ordering a nuclear strike. And the top national security personnel in the FBI, CIA, NSA, and the Director of National Intelligence need to block any rash actions by Trump that threaten American democracy. I think it's not just me. Many people, including John Brennan, have said that it's really a dangerous time we're in now. And so I am very concerned that I'm not the only one who feels that way.
So it seems like Donald Trump, and we've talked about before, he thinks he's king and president is not king, that he can use his own personal biases to slant the government. And that's not what government is about. And I bring about something that I've talked about before that I think is important. And I hate to have to pronounce the name, but Geraldine Ferraro, and I'm sorry, it's just a hard name to pronounce. I do apologize. And may she rest in peace. I talk about someone.
Is that the problem?
Right. Talk about someone. I cried when I heard that she died. I worked in her campaign, as I'm sure I told you, with Mondale as president.
She was in the county where I lived at the time, yes.
Anyway, bottom line is, what did I talk about Mrs. Ferraro about? Well, I indicated that she's Catholic, and her religion made her not be pro-choice. She was pro-life. However, she did not feel that she should inflict her beliefs on the public, and that abortion is legal and should be legal. As a practicing Catholic, she was personally against abortion, but she would not work to outlaw it, unlike, let's say, our current vice president and some other people. And I really admired her for that. I mean, she was very candid about it. She opened herself up to criticism from everybody. I absolutely applauded her. In fact, the fact that she said that was one of the reasons why I just thought she was almost a goddess, and why I still think her legacy is important. Bottom line is, compare that to Donald Trump and to Mike Pence. I hate to have to say it, but shoving their beliefs, not just religious beliefs, beliefs about many things, in people's face. And that's not how government works.
Right.
I know we've talked about this before, Ron. I presume we agree on most things, not everything, but we would concur about this. I mean, you remember Ferraro talking about abortion and her personal belief and not wanting to inflict it on other people because the way the law was, and that she felt it was only fair. Compare that to Trump. Isn't what Ferraro did, I'd say ladylike or gentlemanly, but just more professional, let's put it that way, than what Trump is doing?
Well, I would also say that he had a debate with Vice President George H.W. Bush at that time, and she came across much better than Sarah Palin, the only other woman to run for vice president, in her debate with then-Senator Joe Biden. So I think, you know, she does, looking back after her death, and now 34 years, my gosh, 34 years since 1984. Can you believe this? She does come across certainly as far better than Sarah Palin did. Interestingly, we haven't heard from Sarah Palin lately. I'm just thinking,
I still like the slogan. You remember the slogan, Ron? Alaska, coldest state, hottest governor. You remember that one, right?
Yes. Yeah. But it's interesting. We don't hear much from her anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. And then
it's a blessing, I think.
Not
Sarah
quite
Palin.
Sure, but I'm sure she will resurface. She's still fairly young, and, you know, still not pretty easy on the eyes. But that's not the entire qualification. But anyway,
yes, I agree on
let's
that.
Let's get to maybe a lighter but topic, but one that we both really do enjoy, especially since I've befriended the professor. I guess we're friends.
Of course.
I found myself even more interested in presidential history and stats and demographics than I used to be. And that would be the blog that he wrote on the 18th, which I think was last Saturday. And that blog relates to young people running for presidency. And maybe ironically, because we now have the oldest person ever to assume office. And again, I think Donald Trump does seem younger because, I mean, he has his young, beautiful, I believe she's 48-year-old wife. And
yes,
he does tweet a lot. And, you know, he's overweight and eats a lot of Big Macs. But I guess he's kind of like, you know, you talk about your grandma who smoked and drank and was overweight and didn't exercise and lived to be 100. I think he's kind of like that. He doesn't have a very healthy lifestyle. I mean, golfing is healthy. It's not like playing football, I mean, or tennis, but it is a sport. It is healthy. He does use his body in that fashion. but he doesn't look like he's in great shape. But I still, you know,
he doesn't mention golf. He says his exercise is moving his hands when he makes a speech. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we'd agree, Ron. That Donald Trump may not have the healthiest lifestyle, but he is a young man for being early 70s, as he is. He does seem healthy.
But he takes a cart to play golf. He doesn't walk.
Yeah. But he does seem younger, and again, it's not always a case of having a healthy lifestyle. You know, I said we all have a grandma who smoked and drank and lived to be 95 years old.
Yes.
And I'm not quite sure about Donald Trump, but he does seem healthy, and he doesn't seem to sleep very much. He stays up until 3 or 4 in the morning and tweeting. So I guess
he's, and also I've read that he gets so furious and angry for like half an hour at a time at different events that it could cause him to have a heart attack or stroke, because that's not healthy to be angry.
I guess like
so
some things in life, he's just an enigma. So anyway, what was I getting at before I went off on a tangent? Well, anyway,
about the youngest president.
Right. We have some people. We've talked about Joe Kennedy III or IV, whichever one he is, the chapstick kid, as I call him. He'll be around 40 in 2020. Hard to believe somebody born in 1980 will be 40. I remember watching Dick Clark's New Year's Eve with my sister as it went from 1979 to 1980. So just as an aside. But we've had presidents that have assumed office in their 40s, including Mr. Obama. And we may have, interestingly, we may be going from the oldest president to take office to possibly the youngest. We talked about Mark Zuckerberg could possibly have aspirations, and I don't think he'd win, but, I mean, who knows?
You never know in this
country. Yeah, kind of near that cutoff. You only have to be 35, and he's pushing 35, so he would be a rather young president, but I think he may have aspirations for a different office, but president will have to
be. Yeah, he'd be 36 and 8 months, which would make him 3.5 months younger than William Jennings Bryan, who ran and lost in 1896 and would have been 36 and 11.5 months. So he would be 3.5 months younger than William Jennings Bryan. Yeah, that would be amazing.
Anyway,
he'd be the youngest ever.
The chapstick kid, I believe John F. Kennedy was his great uncle. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. He was the youngest elected president, and
he probably looked 10 years
younger. I mean, he was 43 and a half and 61, and he was definitely youthful. So we see some of that in Joe Kennedy, the second to the third, whichever one he is. You know, again, the one who was on TV with the chapstick on his chin, as we've talked about. Teddy Roosevelt. Succeeded to the presidency at 42 years and 10 and a half months in 1901 upon the assassination of President William McKinley. Oh, by the way, if you, the listener, want to read more about presidential assassinations, be sure to read Ron's book about presidential assassinations. Here's the plug we're going to make. It certainly is interesting. We've talked about it almost every show in some way, but we did dedicate a whole show to the book. But it's available.
Thank you. Yeah, the title is Assassination Threats in the American Presidency from Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama, Roman Littlefield Publishers, 2015, and paperback, 2017.
Yes, and do purchase. And if you're in South Florida, Dr. Fineman occasionally has book signings and seminars about the book. And look him up. It'll certainly be of interest. In the 44 election, the one where the newspaper said that Dewey beat Truman, of course, he didn't, but that was before the internet and immediate gratification of statistics. He would have been 42 and a half had he taken the oath of office in 1945. So let's go ahead and fast forward to the 2020 election. Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, that's a good name, Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii. She should be from Oklahoma. That way her name would be Tulsi from Tulsa, but she would be Tulsi Gabbard.
Yes,
of
she's
Hawaii.
Also Hindu religion, which would be a first, a Hindu president, yes.
And she That's would be 39 and a half on Inauguration Day. Eric Smallwell, or maybe it's Smallwell because there's only one L in the small part. Anyway, he would be a rather small age, only 40. He's from California. We talked about Mr. Chapstick. He'd be 40 in 3.5 months. And Congressman Seth Moulton of Massachusetts would be 42 in 3 months. So a lot of young candidates, and we also look at...
Also one mayor and one hoped-for mayor, Jason Kanza, running in Kansas City, Missouri for next year, and South Bend, Indiana, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who also happens to be gay, openly gay, and would be the first gay president that's actually come out and said so. And he just got married recently to his partner.
I wonder what Mike Pence has to think about that, being a mayor of South Bend, Indiana.
In Indiana, yes. But he's been there since 2012, and he's very popular. And then, of course, he would be the second youngest possible turning 39 in one day old. He's born in January.
It would be interesting if Seth Buttigieg became governor of Indiana. And wouldn't we have kind of two very different governors? We would have Pence, and then right after that, Mr. Buttigieg as governor of Indiana. Yeah. That certainly would be interesting, isn't it? That's how the
twist. But his birthday is January 19th. If he was inaugurated, he'd be 39 and one day old on inauguration day 2021, which I find fascinating.
And just interestingly, this is, again, as we said, following the oldest president to take office. Again, he does seem younger, but Donald Trump is the oldest president to take the oath and ascend to that office and sit in the Oval Office. So you never quite know. However, we talk about Mr. Biden, who would become the oldest. He's pushing 80. So you never really know. Bottom line is, we're not really sure, Ron, the age of the next president. Could be someone late 30s, early 40s, essentially
or 70s, because, of course, Joe Biden would be 78, and Bernie Sanders would be 79. And if Jerry Brown ran, he'd be 82. Can you believe that?
And or it could be someone, the traditional, presidential age, and you're generally 50s, maybe to early to mid-60s. So I guess we'll...
Average is 55, yes.
Yeah, I guess
overall.
We'll find out, and that's part of the interesting part of politics.
It's a list of 54 people rumored that the Democrats might run.
Yeah, we just really don't know. I mean, remember the Republican debate? There was like 18 people, right? And Donald Trump was there, but he wasn't thought of as being the serious candidate. I think people thought that Cruz was a front runner. Even Carly Fiorina, former head honcho at HP, she was probably thought of as a more serious candidate. So you never just when you think you figure it out. Life takes a turn. Let's talk about another topic. Again, we've touched on this before, but we might as well retouch it because it certainly is of interest. It's known that Donald Trump is not quite a fan of dogs or cats, and that isn't bad. Honestly, I think people make a big deal of it. Some people don't like dogs and cats, and I understand Donald Trump. He's known as I guess, kind of a germaphobe, as we want to say, and certain things that he may be different about, which I don't think is a big deal at all. Everybody has lifestyle interests. Donald Trump just isn't a pet person. Nothing wrong with that. It's just interesting that most other presidents, 40 of the 43 American presidents, with the exception of Martin Van Buren, James K. Polk, and Andrew Johnson, have owned and had pets while they served as president.
Now it's four.
The exotic dog that the Obamas got in office, I think his name was Buddy, right? That got a lot of press. And
yes,
he'd get a dog if he became president. I think it was something like that.
Yeah.
And I know that – I remember also, as I've talked about before, he promised Michelle he would quit smoking if he became president. And who knows? Again, good luck with pets, Ron. People make a big deal about it. I don't care if he smokes. Honestly, president's a stressful job, and I think smoking might help. If you're already smoking, I think it's probably a bad job to try to quit with all the stress. So I really could care the less if Obama smokes. And I really don't – I am intrigued, but I don't see it as a bad or good point that Donald Trump
just that it could shorten your life. That's the only thing.
Yeah, they don't have any pets. I understand humans aren't perfect, and I guess it does. It may be a thing where it's not as serious of a topic, not as life or world changing topic. It's other things we talk about, like the scandals, like immigration. So we talk about something which is interesting from a statistical and historical standpoint, but I wouldn't say is quite as much of an impact on the world around us. However,
I wanted to say about the pets article, it's interesting that Calvin Coolidge had the most pets, if you look at the article. 25 different kinds of pets, not all dogs, obviously. 25 pets. Theodore Roosevelt had 24. John F. Kennedy had 19. Ronald Reagan had 11. And then the others were less, as far as. But it is interesting, and the fact that we could say that some of them have become famous, like Millie, who is Barbara Bush's dog, and Socks the Cat under Bill Clinton, the only cat that became famous somewhat. There's been some, and of course, Fowler, FDR's dog, that he used as a campaign issue when he was running for re-election, that he was being attacked.
Mr. Nixon in the Checkers speech. Checkers was his dog.
And Checkers,
right?
Well, that was before he was president. Checkers also, yes. Yeah.
Bet you're impressed that I knew that. You never quite know.
Yeah, and John F. Kennedy had Macaroni, a pony that his daughter Caroline rode on while he was president. I have a list of some of the more famous pets in this article, including Lyndon Johnson having him and her.
But anyway,
Yeah.
You write that Donald Trump has utilized the term dog and the term animal as a pejorative against individuals. I always like that word, pejorative. Such as Omarosa Manigault Newman and groups like Mexican immigrants. And that is certainly disheartening. And we know, Ron, that Donald Trump does need to watch his language and be a gentleman. And his mouth has gotten him into trouble more times.
I don't think he knows how to be. And he's declared war on endangered species and protection of wildlife, including advocacy of hunting and bringing home to America endangered animals from other nations in Africa and around the world of sport. And that's, I think, disgraceful.
So the pardoning of the turkey, a celebrational presidential duty.
Yes.
You write, it's led to a hostile reaction by such turkeys and by the president himself, who seems uncomfortable with the holiday tradition.
Yes.
You also list a bunch of presidents who did not have dogs. That would be 10, in addition to, of course, Donald Trump. One would be the president that I don't think anybody other than yourself or myself has heard of, and that would be Millard Fillmore, one of the more obscure presidents.
Yes. But what's interesting, the last one not to have a dog until Trump is McKinley. Every president from TR on has had a dog.
And some presidents have had horses, birds, cows, and rabbits, with the exception of Van Buren, Polk, and Andrew Johnson. Cats are rare for presidents, which is kind of interesting. Only Lincoln, Rutherford B. Hayes, and William McKinley had cats before the 20th century.
Only three, yes.
George W. Bush had a cat. Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, and Bill Clinton. They were cat people. Again, Sox, the very famous presidential cat. And like with Millie, I mean, kind of a folk hero. You know, Millie wrote a book, I believe, ghostwritten by Barbara Bush.
So, yeah, George W. Bush had Barney and Miss Beasley.
And I do apologize again for...
And Bo and Sonny were Barack Obama's pets.
Right,
yeah.
Buddy was Clinton's dog, but Sonny was Barack Obama's dog, along with Bo. So...
Yes.
Interesting.
And Liberty for Gerald Ford.
Right, the way my brain works, I remember Checkers and Richard Nixon, but I confused the presidential dog names of Obama and Clinton, but that's okay. It wasn't a major error. Certainly, it's hard to keep this stuff straight for sure.
Yeah, and Warren G. Harding from your, you know, indeed, which your station's named after, had Laddie Boy, a dog. Yes, Laddie Boy, 100 years ago, almost 100 years now. Is there going to be a special celebration about Harding in 2021, the 100th anniversary of his inauguration? I would hope so, locally.
Well, I'm sure Scott Spears will have some guest on. I mean, he has all kinds of
interesting. On March 4th. Yeah. 2021, which was the inauguration day then, he should probably have his pickles this far ahead. But it's something to think about. The 100th anniversary of the centennial, or even if his election in November 2020 will be 100
right.
years.
He had his grandson, Jim Blasing, on recently, and he's been on multiple times.
Yes.
He's always a very gracious guest. And Rona Barrett was on last week. I mean, you know, Scott Spears, the interviewer to the stars, you never quite know whom he will have on. We also recently lost a wonderful actress, Mrs. Garrett, Charlotte Ray. He had multiple tributes to Charlotte Ray.
Yes.
On the air, including from Pat Carroll, who's been on dozens and dozens of times, talking about Mrs. Garrett, Charlotte Ray. Someone just have to love her. She also was on a rather memorable episode of All in the Family, kind of when she was a little less famous. So really, really great actress. And also shows you don't have to be gorgeous to be a great actress or a character actor. And Charlotte Ray was cute in that kind of grandmotherly way, but she didn't have the traditional leading lady type of looks. But that isn't always important. She was a great actress and very likable, had an infectious giggle.
I agree,
and that's also important. If not more important, you like someone who looks like a regular person. And I think Archie Bunker and Edith Bunker were kind of like that. Roseanne. I mean, again, these are controversial people. You don't want to talk about Roseanne, but controversial people, controversial shows. But the fact that these actors and actresses looked like your next door neighbor was certainly part of their appeal. So anyway,
now,
back to
Archie Bunker from the 70s, we would now have a person like that in the White House. Who would think 45 years later we would have this? It would never imagine. Somebody said, in the late 20-teens, we're going to have an Archie Bunker type. But that's except he's not.
Did you hear where Rob Reiner, who played Meathead, Mike Stivic, Archie's television son-in-law, say that we now have Archie Bunker in the White House? That was kind of funny. I giggled a bit when I heard
true,
that.
It's true, though, when you think about it,
I will say, and again, I don't want to be too negative, but yes, Archie Bunker was prejudiced. He wasn't perfect, but he was very devoted
to
his wife.
Carol Connor was just the opposite.
Right. Right, and again, the actor Carol O'Connor was completely opposite to Archie Bunker. But Archie Bunker as a character, Ron, we would certainly agree, yes, he wasn't perfect. Yes, he was bigoted. Yes, he ran his mouth. However, he was very devoted to his wife. He was an excellent, excellent father, a hard worker. He embodied many good American values.
Yes, he did.
And in the end, he bought the neighborhood bar. And certainly his opinions on things liberalized. He dated a Latino girl, for example, after Edith's death. And we know this is a TV show, but there are some differences. And in many ways, Archie Bunker was he was a caring person and a good role model. He ran his mouth too much and was ignorant of a lot of
He wasn't in government running the country. That's the difference.
And he wasn't president. So, I mean, there are some parallels and some things that aren't parallels, but kind of hearing Rob Reiner say that was certainly something that I giggled about, and in some ways agree, some ways don't. But that's, again, part of the fascination of the presidency and the world we live in, little parallels we can make and little analogies and anecdotes that we can tickle our brain cells with. Back on the 15th of August, Ron, in your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, you wrote, "The crucial Senate races on road to Democratic majority, 116th Congress. We recently witnessed a very, very tight race for a House district in Ohio, and it does include the southeastern part of our listening area. And the Republican barely beat out the Democrat, but that's just to fill a vacant post. They will battle it out again in November, and we'll see what happens. They're still counting the votes because it was within literally a few hundred votes, an extremely close race. Troy Balderson and Danny O'Connor, currently the Franklin County recorder for the Columbus area. So, again, we're seeing a major battleground, Ron, in these elections. And you're right, if the Senate is to go Democratic, all 10 seats must be won by their Democratic veterans, but that is a tall order and is tied to the hearings over Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. And as we've talked about, Kavanaugh doesn't believe the president should be held to the same law-abiding standards as non-presidents, and I think that is hogwash, to put it mildly. Although Kavanaugh does speak well.
And also he's changing his view from when he was helping Ken Starr against Bill Clinton 20 years ago when he thought it could be. So he's changed his view, and it just seems self-serving.
He's obviously a scholar. He's very, very smart. He's well-spoken, but that's certainly important, but that isn't everything. He's a conflict of interest waiting to happen. And he's also very socially conservative, doesn't have social beliefs that are consistent with us, and I think most Americans. So we shall see what happens, but I do worry about the guy. Yes, he does talk a good talk, but that's only part of it. You write
that. I'm concerned about the Florida race where I live. That Rick Scott is three times the money that Bill Nelson does, and it's going to be hard for Nelson to keep that seat. And also now New Mexico, Martin Heinrich was supposed to have no real trouble being reelected, but now Gary Johnson, the Libertarian 2016 presidential nominee, has entered the race as an independent, so it makes it a three-way race. So a seat thought to be safe might possibly, although my oldest son David says he will win it, he believes, because he knows Heinrich, and he doesn't think it'll be a problem. But still, it makes it more complicated having Gary Johnson in that race in New Mexico. So it's going to be a tall order, and they need to gain a couple of seats, and there's a few seats and that are possibly to gain in Arizona, Nevada, Tennessee, and Texas. But it's going to be a hard battle for the Senate to go Democratic.
In looking at some of the reelections, and many of these are in nearby states, not to mention the state we hang our hat in, Sherrod Brown, very established Democratic senator, might he or might not he be reelected? Let's go one state east to Pennsylvania, Bob Casey Jr. Let's go north to Michigan, Debbie Stabenow, if that's how you pronounce it. And let's go out west, cowboy country, Montana Senator John Tester, going to the test.
And also Wisconsin, Tammy Baldwin, who's lesbian and is out, has always been out, but that could become an issue if the Republican nominee makes it an issue, because of the whole issue of gay marriage and gay rights. So that is a problem, too, I think.
And in West Virginia, you list an endangered senator, just one state to our southeast, Joe Manchin. And also one state to the west, we talk about Indiana, well, Senator Joe Donnelly. So what we're saying, Ron, is that all these people, we don't think that all these people are necessarily going to be reelected. And maybe seven or eight of them will, but then the Democrats have to gain some seats. So the Senate is definitely going to undergo some transition. No.
But unlikely, I would say, that it's going to go Democratic. It'd have to take a lot of luck. But, you know, there's some people who have been saying, why don't the two women who are pro-choice and yet seem to always go along with the Republican Party, why don't they become Democrats? Why can't Lisa Murkowski, who ran as an independent when she lost the Republican nomination in the Senate in 2010 and won as a third as an independent, why can't she at least be an independent or become a Democrat?
Yeah,
and why can't, you know, obviously Susan Collins in Maine, but they don't seem to be moving in that direction.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we talk about my politics and independent. I mean, economically, I'm certainly Republican. I'd rather say conservative. I don't like the D and the R and the L word. But it comes to things like pro-choice, where it's well established I'm very pro-choice, so it would be more leaning toward the D word or the L word. And maybe that's kind of where the women are coming from. Plus, it is, I would say, more common because it is, it's an issue for everybody, but it certainly relates to women's bodies and the laws that say, keep your laws off my body. That there are many women who are more conservative, more to the right economically, but certainly are pro-choice. And they're kind of, kind of torn. They probably feel the Democrats are too liberal in many ways, and they don't agree with everything that the Republicans do, but it's okay. You don't have to conform fully. You don't have to go belief by belief, line item, and agree with everything that the Republican Party has in its platform, and the same thing for the Democrats. And I guess that's where they're coming from, but it's kind of hard to say.
But I must say, if they were to switch parties to the Democrats, they would get, I'm sure, committee chairmanships for the Democrats. They could switch and make a 51-49 Democratic right now if they did it, Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins. But yet, it doesn't look like they're ever going to do that.
And you mentioned that the problem, again, with this turnover of the Senate, even if all these 11 senators that we talked about and a few others from other states are successfully reelected, which is unlikely, but it's possible, Democrats must still win two more seats with Arizona, Nevada, Tennessee, and Texas as possibilities. The problem I see, Ron, is that Arizona, Tennessee, and Texas are more Republican. Nevada, I'm not quite sure about. It's kind of hard to tell. Now, we did talk that Texas is kind of becoming more Democratic, but it still would lean Republican. Arizona and Tennessee certainly are more Republican. So who knows?
Yes, but Beto O'Rourke, the Democrat in Texas, is really done quite a campaign. And Ted Cruz is not well liked, even by Republicans in the Senate. They don't like the man. You know, he might be smart, but they don't like him, the man. And in Tennessee, the former governor Phil Bredesen is ahead of Marsha Blackburn, the congresswoman who's a Republican nominee, who also is not well liked as a personal level. So the question is whether the personality of Cruz and Blackburn can work against them and give those seats to Democrats in Texas and Tennessee.
It is hard to tell, and that's part of the interesting thing called politics. And while we always seem to run out of time,
it really does. Yes,
but you know, we talked a lot of this. We talked about a lot of stuff. Even Aretha Franklin. We spent about 10 minutes on the late great R&B singer, again whose legacy will continue and for long, long time, and influence almost everybody who gets in front of a microphone. Even myself, when I do karaoke, I can talk about not being able to hold her microphone cord, but certainly wish I had pipes like she did. I'm not sure anybody ever will. Talked about presidential hopefuls, young, old, and in between. Talked about the Donald and how he conducts himself, his tweeting, the fact that he does seem young for someone in his early 70s, despite a lifestyle that may not be the healthiest.
Me too, actually, yeah.
Everybody's a little bit different. And some of the Senate races coming up, including Sherrod Brown here in Ohio, West Virginia, Indiana, Michigan, and the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, with kind of the funny sounding last name, which has multiple pronunciations, and indicating that if he were to become governor, which is possible, South Bend is one of the top five cities in Indiana. It's a big college town area. I mean, it's not very far from Columbus. Certainly, it's a nice city. I've been there a few times. Anyway, if he were, you know, possibly to
imagine though, if he became president, his name would be made fun of in headlines, and they'd be pronouncing it not Buttigieg, but you guess what, Buttigieg, and probably all kinds of nasty comments would be made because he's gay. It would be a nightmare, probably, if he got elected to be president. Yeah. But anything is possible.
Let's say that the National Enquirer and those kind of publications would have a field day. But
yeah, I want to say we did a lot today, but one thing we did not get to, which we should try to get to, is the Democratic platform that I propose should be coming up in 2020. The urgent, from the 13th, the urgent Democratic platform for 2020, 30 goals, and you and I had discussed it privately. Oh, yeah. We should probably discuss this maybe next week
We'll address that, but, you know, we did quite a bit in the 45 minutes.
Yes, and without planning. And without
that's how we roll. And that's you, the listener, we appreciate your tuning in to this show. You never quite know what you're going to hear, and whatever it is, it'll certainly be intriguing.
And I never know what you're going to ask me, just like with Scott, I never know, but that's what makes it best. You
That's part of the fun. In honor of the late, great Aretha Franklin, we won't take a trip to the freeway of love. We'll take a trip to the airwaves in our pink Cadillac as we drive into the sunset. Who's Zoomin' Who, Ron, and Freeway of Love were from my radio days back in upstate New York, and I remember playing those two songs. I always liked Who's Zoomin' Who. Good beat to it, danceable, but even with a bit of overproduction and synthesized instruments, her voice just shines through. It doesn't matter, again, if the song's any good or not. Anything she sings, just like with Karen Carpenter, it's going to be magic. And I hope anybody with an aspiring music career, listen to Aretha Franklin. Even if you don't like R&B music, you don't like female soloists, listen to her music. Listen to Karen Carpenter. Listen to George Michael. These people had, David Bowie, had unmistakable talent. And it's an influence no matter what kind of a singer you are, believe me, as someone with more than a little bit of knowledge.
Just like Frank Sinatra through the back. Always great no matter what she thought of him otherwise, yes.
Exactly. And on that note, Ron, we say thank you very much for being with us here on The Talking Place.
Thank you again for inviting me. It was lots of fun.
WWGH Radio. And again, please visit his blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com. You may learn something. Have a great rest of your Monday, Ron. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks a lot.